Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Now, our first guest has written her memoir about when she went from a young woman straight from college to the CIA and then to the FBI. To tell us more, welcome to the show, Tracy Walder.
Hi, thank you so much for having me, Selena.
It's a pleasure, Tracy. Thanks for being on the show. So how did this all happen? You're just at college, you're with your college sorority, and you decided to join the CIA. Was it something you always wanted to do?
So that's a great question. The short answer is no. I grew up, just to kind of orient your audience to my age, I grew up, you know, in the late 80s, early 90s-ish. And, you know, quite frankly, my view of the CIA was, you know, Sean Connery and James Bond, which, you know, wasn't super appealing to, you know, a 19-year-old college girl. So I really didn't have an idea of what the CIA was. And quite frankly, you know, where I would fit in it. It really didn't become a career path for me until Osama bin Laden's interview in 1997, when he declared war on the U.S. And that was really the first time that we saw him on really a Western news station.
Right. Okay. And then what? How'd you join the CIA? Presumably, it's not easy. There's lots of training involved.
So you, a lot of times here in the United States, the CIA and FBI, which I know might seem surprising to some, actually recruit on college campuses. It's not unusual to go to many colleges here and see them have tables at, you know, recruitment and career fairs and things like that. So I actually gave them my resume at a career fair and they called. CIA is a little bit different than FBI in that your training actually occurs, I would say, a few months into a year into the job, whereas at FBI, you begin your training right away. So CIA, I would say, is more of an arduous background process. And that took me, on average, it takes people 18 months. I was on the young, very young side. So it took me maybe about 5 or 6 months to pass my background check.
And does it normally follow that you go from the CIA to the FBI? Is that like the next step up?
No, not at all. It's from what I gather, highly unusual. You know, most people, once they leave the CIA, they go into sort of the private work sector here. A lot of it is to earn more money. And they do consulting and things like that at private companies here in the United States. Going from CIA to FBI is quite unusual. And they both have very, very, very different cultures and really different goals, quite frankly.
Yeah. It does sound sort of James Bondish. It sounds unreal. It's hard to imagine. And I would imagine a very male-dominated world. Did that make things a bit difficult?
So, you know, both agencies are, I would argue, more male-heavy, male-dominated, FBI more so. In national security here in the United States, about 24% of those jobs are held by women. So obviously, it's quite low. At CIA, I felt that it was very much a meritocracy, in that if you were the best person to go to whatever country or do whatever job, you did it regardless of your gender. At the FBI, only about 17% of special agents are women. And law enforcement has a very different culture than, you know, sort of intelligence gathering, if you will. And it is very much masculine here in the U.S. And I would say I'm extremely feminine in my looks and fashion and all of that. And I definitely had a hard time in the FBI's environment.
Yes, yes, I can totally understand that. And your resume, I mean, I think about my CV, my resume, and it's nothing like yours. At one point, you watched Al-Qaeda members with drones as President Bush looked over your shoulder and the CIA director bought you donuts.
Yes. As one always experiences, I don't understand. That's unusual. But yes, my life is, I don't think, because I lived my life, obviously, and, you know, my friends also lived that life. I've never found it unusual or different, right? To me, it just seemed I guess, normal, if you will. But obviously in writing the book and talking about it, I realized that this is not the norm and it is quite unusual, the life that I led.
Yeah, I suppose it's only when you step away that you realize how different it was. You're not doing it now, I assume.
No. So I always tell folks that the CIA, I started my life wanting to be actually a high school history teacher. I was very inspired by a teacher that I had. And I say that the CIA taught me what I want to teach and the FBI taught me who I want to teach. And I think I realized that those percentages that I quoted you before, part of the issue is that we just don't have enough women in these careers. And I realized, what if I started creating curriculum for high school and college students, women in particular, to get them interested in foreign policy and national security. And that's what I do now. I've created curriculum for all girls schools, and I'm a professor of criminal justice and domestic terrorism at a university in the state that I live in.
And do you find that there's a lot of females wanting to do it?
I do. I had over 50 students surprise me just before the pandemic, actually, at a book event that I was doing. And they are all in those careers, whether it's FBI, CIA, our Department of Homeland Security here, State Department. It's really great, because once I expose them to it, they sort of take off in it, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I'm sure. And, you know, it's a crazy thing to read. You tracked chemical terrorists, you've searched for the world, weapons of mass destruction. Were you actually involved in the September the 11th attacks?
So, yes, I was at CIA headquarters on September 11th, which I know is, yes, it was quite the place to be. And I was working in the Counterterrorism Center. That's what I did. I was on the operations side of the CIA. And my job at that particular time was looking at terrorist training camps in Afghanistan, looking at activity, things like that, that was, you know, going on or not going on there. And it's interesting, I did not know that the first plane had hit the World Trade Center. None of us really did. We didn't know until the second plane hit the World Trade Center. And, you know, really that's because at CIA headquarters, you're not allowed to bring phones, you know, and things like that inside. Yeah. So you wouldn't have necessarily known. It was someone in an outside building, actually, that called me to tell me what had happened. And so, yeah, being in the Counterterrorism Center on September 11th was, it was hard, because I think we all feel a sense of collective responsibility for the events that transpired that day.
Yeah, sure. It must have been, well, I can't imagine. I can't imagine how it was. And what did you have to actually do physically? Were they just like get out of there, or did you have to help?
Yes. So, you know, most of the CIA, the Pentagon, you know, all of those places were evacuated. However, the folks that were in the Counterterrorism Center, we did stay within CIA headquarters. And that was because obviously they needed us to be there. They needed our knowledge. And we stayed there for a couple of days. And then I began working kind of those crazy shifts that you mentioned earlier, with a lot of important people sort of over my shoulder. And I think I was working maybe 20 hours a day, 7 days a week, you know, really at that point. But I think it was all for the greater good.
And your family must have been so worried about you.
You know, I think they were, but to my parents' credit, they kept that to themselves, which I really appreciated, because I think had they told me how worried they were about me, I maybe wouldn't have done what I did. And I think now as a parent myself, I look back on that and realize how grateful I am to them for just being wholeheartedly supportive of what I was doing.
Yeah. And I believe you created a chemical terror chart. What was that all about?
Yes. So that is, I guess, one of the big epiphanies of the book, if you will. One of the things, even though I was on the operations side, you know, we have to keep our targets, the people we're looking for, straight. And I worked in the Counterterrorism Center's weapons of mass destruction groups. And my job was to find members of Al-Qaeda who are trying to procure weapons of mass destruction. And my target was a guy named Zarqawi, who later founded ISIS. And we created charts to, I guess, keep them straight. And we had Zarqawi at the top of our chart and some of his little henchmen kind of underneath there. And it was the Zarqawi poison chart. And we had it up on our cubicles in our office. And a member of the Bush administration at that time came by and wanted a copy of that chart, which, again, not an unusual request. He took that chart and we didn't think twice about what happened to it. But it was used by Colin Powell a few days later on the floor of the UN. And you can Google it. It is online to start the Iraq War. And the chart, the title of the chart was actually changed to Zarqawi and al-Qaeda's connections to Iraq, which obviously was not the point we were making. But to take it even one step further for, you know, the European audience, which I think a lot of people don't realize, is a lot of those folks, other folks, his henchmen on his chart, we were tracking and, you know, trying to stop terrorist attacks. And about a month or two after that, they had gone underground. So we lost them. And they went ahead and blew up a subway in Spain and killed quite a few people. And those were the folks that we were tracking. And we lost them because their faces were plastered, you know, all over TV. And they sort of went underground and we lost track of them. And that was... It was really tough. I think people don't realize the larger fallout of leaking that chart.
Yes, I'm sure. I'm sure that's very, very frustrating. And as far as terrorism's concerned, I read that you had to debrief terrorists. These are the sort of men that wouldn't even speak to a woman. How did you manage that?
So I'm trying to talk around this. I don't want to get in trouble. It's not difficult to get their attention and to get them to talk to you when you have a captive audience, if that makes any sense. So they were not in a situation where they could refuse to talk to me necessarily.
I understand. I understand. Okay. You had to travel all over the place. I mean, you went North America, Europe, obviously the Middle East, shutting down multiple chemical attacks. It sounds like a highly dangerous and a highly scary world. And you described yourself earlier, and I have a picture of you from your website. You look very feminine is the way I would describe it, to your credit. But you're obviously very tough.
Yes, I guess... I think that dichotomy is okay. You know, we're so used to seeing pop culture and things like that of what people who do these jobs should look like. And I think that raises a bigger issue, you know, than people who don't fit whatever that mold is supposed to be, whether it's gender, race, ethnicity, those kinds of things. Then they run into issues, you know, of stereotyping in the workplace, just difficulties in the workplace. And I think we need to hopefully try to get out of that because, you know, you can be feminine. I am super feminine. I make no apologies about that. No. But I can be good at my job and I can be tough, and that is okay. And I think we need to, I guess, normalize that a little bit.
Yeah, I think you're right. And is that why you became on the board of directors for Girl Security?
Yes. And that's what I had mentioned before. That's why it became so important to me to try to change the gender narrative. We also work with female racial minorities as well to try to change those narratives in terms of what people see in these environments and consider, I guess, normal, if you will, in these environments. And that's what we do.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's a fascinating read. It really is. It's called The Unexpected Spy, a great title, from the CIA to the FBI, My Secret Life, Taking Down Some of the World's Most Notorious Terrorists. It's by Tracy Walder, who we're speaking to now. And I'm guessing you have your own website as well, if people want to find out more.
Yes, I do. It's tracywalder.com.
Simple as that. And you can see a picture of the gorgeous Tracy Walder on the front. Thank you so much, Tracy, for being with us today on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I hope you have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.